Hello, and welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. I normally record these on Thursday nights, but that didn't work out, and I did need to place my DCBS order. And for you Galactica fans, the Eagle Moss have the actual Galactica on there. So I have the Cylon base ship and the Viper so far. And now the Galactic is coming. I thought I owned the Cylon ship, but maybe I forgot to order it, or maybe it's in the queue to come. I love Battlestar Galactica. Well, a few things I want to talk about. I get mad, and I don't know why I get mad, because it's stupid. But I get upset when people tweet things that try to say things for the whole industry or influence the whole industry. And I've talked about this in past episodes, like people doing petitions to stop a comic book from coming out. I think it's absurd. I really do. I think it's just because you have these beliefs, you should not limit other people from seeing something. If it offends you, then don't buy it. I mean, there was a Harlequin cover B that never came out because it had I think it had the Joker with a gun to Harley's head or something like that. Or Batwoman, sorry, Batwoman's. I just and then there's the Milo Manara ass Spider-Woman cover that people were complaining about. If you don't like it, don't buy it. Why do you have to like butt your own fucking opinions into everybody else's world? I don't go into your world and say I'm gonna protest something that you like. I just don't get it. And there was this discussion about, and it was pretty civilized discussion, and I try to listen to both sides about Second Coming, the series from Vertigo, and I try to open my mind, but it kind of pisses me off. These people that complaining were probably not going to buy the damn thing anyway. And they probably don't even understand what Vertigo is based on. Like with religion, we've had several series that have tackled religion. Alan Moore's Swamp Thing. Matter of fact, that got to the point where I think Alan Moore left the book because he was going to have Swamp Thing meet Jesus Christ. And again, they were censoring that as he was going through time. You have a lot of Vertigo series exploring religion. Preacher, you have Lucifer, you have Phantom Stranger, which is hardcore religion, in my opinion, especially when God is represented by a dog on Earth. Nobody complains about that. Or Spectre, which deals with a lot of religion. You know why they don't complain about it? Because it doesn't say it in the goddamn solicit. That's why. I mean, if you're gonna try to pull something off, maybe you should keep the solicit on a down toad, because these people will come out of the woodworks and enforce their beliefs on other people. And that drives me crazy. The Vertigo was founded on freedom of speech, in my opinion, and it's dealt with religion, it's dealt with politics, it's dealt with some hard topics, racism, all kinds of different stuff. And Vertigo's hitting its stride now with with some of the titles that are coming out. And people don't complain about Sandman or Lucifer, and it all does the same sort of thing. But this thing about second coming where Jesus comes back down, it just flipped people off because they think it's making fun of their stuff. Sight unseen, they think that. Yes, the author might be atheist, but that you don't know what that is. I mean, atheists have a right to, in my opinion. Just like Muslims and every other religion. And I personally think that it makes you smarter and makes you get like more informed decisions, like just about life, just to understand different things, instead of taking people's word for something. And that's my two cents on the controversy. That I respect people's opinions that are religious, saying I don't encourage people that are religious to read this, or I'm not gonna buy it, and people that are religious shouldn't buy it, or I'm okay with that. But when you tell me I can't buy it, that's where I have a problem. Or if you try to petition something that I might want to read, that's where I have a problem. And when you try to say it doesn't belong with a big publisher, a big two publisher, that's where I have a problem, because Vertigo was founded on that. And that's what made Vertigo great. And they're just trying to do it again. And we don't need censorship. That's what I think. And politics too. I mean, you could go both right and left and all that stuff. I mean, people know that for listening to this podcast, I'm so anti-Trump. Not because of right or left, just because I think the man is dumb as he doesn't. He doesn't analyze anything. He doesn't think things through. He's very one-dimensional. He doesn't listen to others. When you're a leader, you're gonna make mistakes. But you gotta listen to other people. You gotta listen to other things and be able to accept it and weigh the pros and cons, 'cause every decision you make is a big decision for a lot of people. And he doesn't give a shit. I mean, he's like a honey badger. Honey badger don't give a shit. But that's how I felt. And then there was this other tweet by someone, and I'm not gonna say his name, but I'm gonna read this. And it spun me up a little bit. I shouldn't have, 'cause I should know better. But there's just a lot of the way it's worded is not like it's my opinion. He's basically calling Marvel out, saying, "You're not helping the market with this, Marvel. Your short-term gain doesn't help the long-term success of the industry." And he posts Savage Avengers. What is Savage Avengers? It's a Jerry Duggan, Mark Diodato series that's coming out. I'm pretty excited for it. It is taking Conan and sort of teaming him up. There's some sorcerers that are in Conan's time, and they've done some of this stuff with Red Sonja, bringing her into the current world in Dynamite Comics. But this sorcerer are kind of like tapping into the hand, and the hand and the sorcerers are sort of melding time from what I gauge. And this unites Conan with a couple of characters. I don't know why they're called Avengers, because I don't think Venom has ever been an Avenger. At least I don't recall. Punisher, I don't think, has ever been an Avenger. He's teamed up with the Avengers before. And I don't think Elektra has ever been an Avenger. Now, Wolverine has been an Avenger since Bendis had him. And Dr. Voodoo has been an Avenger, because he was actually the Sorcerer Supreme when it was taken away from Doctor Strange. So you got two Avengers in this. And a group of violent characters, which seem very compatible with Conan. And I think it's a fantastic concept. I just don't understand how you could say this can hurt the industry. I don't understand. You either buy it or you don't. How's it going to hurt the industry? Are you coming from the standpoint of oversaturation of a license? That's probably where he's coming from because they have Conan. They have Savage Sword of Conan. They have Tales of something, Balette or his one of his lovers. They have Conan now in this team book. Yeah, there's some oversaturation, but I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. You either buy it or you don't. Green Hornet did this back in the day, and you could say the Dynamite does this a lot. When they get a license of something, sometimes they'll come out with three Vampirella titles, a couple Red Sonja. But you can pick and choose. That's what's great. It gives you a variety of what you want. If you want Green Hornet in the past, you can choose this one. If you want contemporary Green Hornet, you can choose this. If you want a female Kato, choose this book. If you want the regular Kato, choose this book. I just don't like when people try to enforce their likes or dislikes. And this particular person that said this is a guy that changes his mind every week. And I never challenge him on it. I read his tweets. I like him. I've met him. He says, okay, I'm subscribing to these titles. And then he drops everything and say, I'm going all Kickstarters. And then he goes on this back issue kick. And then he stops that. And then he's not getting comics. And now he's getting more comics. And he like flips like every week. And I don't think he's the type of person that influences like how the market or can make a statement about the market. I probably am not a good person to make a statement about the market because I don't consider myself an average consumer. I consider myself the extreme opposite. So somebody that jumps in and out of comics and somebody that buys everything, they're, yeah, it's just they don't really decide how a book is gonna do. And who, why would you complain about a book that you haven't even read or seen? That's why I hate solicits, man. Because everybody has to like, it's the same thing with showing like coming attractions. Except coming attractions have always been there. And I wonder what Harley's eating. She's like eating something under. I gotta go check this out. So you might hear some static, but hey, what are you doing? No, Harley. Come on. She's digging a hole and eating mud. I don't know what the hell's going on. No way, you're gonna go back outside. You're full of grass. Come on, let's go. So, Harley's been eating a lot of grass, and I don't know if she's got like this upset stomach. She doesn't seem to be, she doesn't seem to be not eating or anything. Come on, Harley. She's eating fine, but I don't know why she's eating so much grass. Like especially grass that's not even like in the summertime she eats grass, but this is like dead grass. And I don't know if her tummy's bothering her or whatever. But how could you make a statement about anything without seeing it? Or like, holy crap, this movie's gonna be lousy because this actors in it and it can't be good. Like, how can you make an assessment? Okay, yeah, I'm making a pet peeve. My pet peeve is like calling bullshit on something when you haven't even seen it. Like, I'm perfectly okay with you critiquing and saying I thought this was crap. Once you've seen it or once you've accessed it, but to critique a preview, it's just insane to me. And how it could hurt Marvel Comics, I have no idea. Like it make a short-term game. The industry's already hurting. I mean, a new series might saturate the market even more and not help the existing titles, but that's been happening for years. I mean, nothing goes on forever. That's why you have so much relaunches, because they can't support the sales at where the book stabilizes at. I mean, it just affects 98% of the titles. I mean, yes, there are exceptions where things actually do well, but they are exceptions. And I don't know. I think if you're I think if you're an actual store owner and you listen to this podcast, and I don't think anybody that is a store owner listens to this podcast. I know one of them has listened to it before, but I don't know if they listen regularly. But if you're a store owner and you get solicited a book like this, I would like to know your impression. Is Marvel hurting itself by putting out Savage Avengers? Is Marvel hurting DC Comics for its competition? So they're hurting, or are they hurting the indies market? Or are they hurting? Who are they hurting by publishing something that's experimental? Let me know. And also let me know what you think about Conan. Like, do you think that there's too many Conan titles and it's hurting your customer base? Because I can't comprehend it ever hurting your customer base. What I can understand is you not having the shelf space to shelve all this stuff and you having to make the tough decisions, are people going to buy it? But if there's a customer demand, it seems to me that you would somewhat know your customers. In other words, I think your strong customers for new comics are your existing customers that have pull boxes, or your mail order customers that have pulls from you. Those are the people that kind of determine what you're going to stock and not stock. And if you're a consumer, don't ever expect to go to a shop and have the book unless you can pre-order it. Yeah, that sucks as a consumer, 'cause it's kind of nice to go browse things at a store and say, "Huh, that looks interesting." But the market's tough now. It's tough. And who knows what's going to happen? But any listeners that have any thoughts about how a new book can, any kind of book, hurt the market. Is it because one of the comments were, well, you're taking a great creative team away from something that they could be supporting, Jerry Dugan and Diodato. They could be doing something else. I guess put the team on an existing title and strengthen that title. Yeah, that argument can be made. But if you take an existing number, let's say that title's on 11, how many people are going to jump on to issue number 11 with the new creative team? There's going to be a few, but I don't think it's going to be a mass shift in people moving to that. Whereas if you put something as a new number one, I think there'll be a lot more people trying out a new number one. And that could hurt. I do agree that number ones hurt existing sequential titles, because there's the shiny new thing. And that part of the system I agree with is that if you have a fixed budget of you could buy, let's say, 20 books a month, and this new shiny thing comes out, you're going to assess the situation and probably take off something that you're enjoying the least and add the new shiny thing. At least that's the way I think that things would go. Or you don't jump on the new shiny thing, or you add it and you suck up that cost by drinking less soda or coffee. I don't know what you have to, you have lots of options. But I just don't see how adding a book can hurt Marvel. Like, how could it hurt Marvel? I just don't get it. Is it because there's too many titles? But usually when they add a title, there's some being canceled at the same time. So if they're doing like 90 bucks, 100 to 90 books a month, usually that's the average of books that they're going to be putting out. That means that books are coming off and books are going on. So it's usually filling the hole. They don't usually go too big. And I imagine if they do go big on an order, it's or exceed what their average is, it's during like summertime, I would think. It seems like a lot of events and stuff and sales seem to go up from June to September or October, and then they decrease in the winter, maybe because of holidays. And then some of the comic shop that I get boxes from says it had their worst January in history. I don't buy comics from them, but I. Harley Quinn! What the hell is that? Oh, Jesus Christ. Where did you get this from? You know, onions are bad for doggies. Mama's gonna be pissed off at you. That was one of her favorite Tupperware. Shame on you. That's not good. Where did that come from? How did you. Man, you're acting weird. I hope you didn't eat a lot of onions, because those are going to get you sick. And when did you do that? Was it while I was podcasting? That was weird. You know better than that. That means you had to like stand on your 2 feet and go into the sink and grab that out. I don't know about that, Hardy. So she gets an upset stomach and decides she needs to eat more. I don't know. So I lost track of where I was. You know better than that, Harley Quinn. It's not like you're a 2 years old puppy. I understand when you're a puppy. You're not a puppy anymore. So, man, I totally lost track of where I was going with that. Oh well. All I knew is there was Harley underneath my chair. When I podcast, she's either at the door saying, "Let me in, let me out," or she's underneath my chair laying down, and I can't hear worth the fuck. I really can't. So, and when I have my headsets on, although I did smell barbecue. Should have snapped. I was like, why does it smell so damn good in here? But there wasn't much in that Tupperware. It just probably smelled good. There was a few onions that fell, and most of them were still in the Tupperware. She was gnawing on the plastic, the lid. It was one of those snap Ziplocs. You probably don't give a shit. So anyway, this comic book sounds fascinating to me, and I like when, yes, I know there's, based on people's responses, there was one person that agreed with the comments saying, yeah, you stop collecting Marvel. Well, if you stop getting Marvel, why are you even commenting to me? If you're, I just don't get it. But a few of people that I know were like, yeah, I'm interested in this. What's, if you get the license, let's bring, use it. And that's what I'm for. They've had some success with Thor as Jane Foster, Conan, and that was a what if story. They had success with Spider-Man as a Fantastic Four in the Hickman run. That was a what if story. They had a what if Conan was in present time. Hey, that's happening. And that could be that it could be just as good as those other things. A lot of the what if stories are becoming reality, and that I think that's cool. I really do. But those are some ad hoc chit chat and a disruption by my daughter because she was eating dirt and then comes inside and decides to get some Tupperware. And Barb is going to be pissed because that is some good Tupperware. I just don't know when she did it. Like, did she do it while I was here? And if she did it while I was here, that's pretty freaking embarrassing that I didn't see it. I was reading some tweets. I'm sorry about that. I'm very distracted. Well, I'm gonna bring up some questions and jump into those because I don't know what else to talk about. Other than my next purchase is going to be I is going to be very ad hoc. There's gonna be some Werewolf by Night. There's gonna be some Moon Knight. There's gonna be a lot of series that I was reading in Advance Comics, and I was like, this stuff came out in 93 and I didn't know about it. 94. There's going to be a purchase from Reed. I'm gonna be getting some cap books from him and some miscellaneous items. Some Wizard magazines and some other things. So that's what I'm looking at. And then probably March will be stagnant because going to C2E2, and what I'm gonna get there, who knows? Although there's this guy, and let me see if I can find him. I wonder if I'm friends with him on Facebook or he just posts to a group. Yeah, his name is Randy Zingaro. And how do I know Randy Zingaro? It was through the comic book page previews phone calls that they used to have on a Friday night. And I met this guy. He was a big Captain America fan. And John Mayall would host this thing. And I talked to him. But anyway, he's on Facebook lately. And he's kind of guiding my He's buying a lot of Golden Age stuff. And I'm talking about like National Comics and Police Comics and the Quality Comics, which I love. And then he's doing a lot of Captain Marvel Family, and these covers are just gorgeous. And I always look for this stuff, and I try to find at least one or two while I'm at the convention, because these are books that are old enough that you want to inspect. You want to look for foxing, you want to look for smell, you want to smell, you want to do all kinds of stuff. And that's what I think I'm going to get, is a couple of Golden Age books, maybe two. And maybe one key. So maybe three books, and then maybe some miscellaneous things that cheap things that I see here and there. And Artist Alley always gets me to buy two or three different comics that I see that are trades that I never even heard of that look interesting. I probably will not do any commissions. I'm done commissions, man. These costs are astronomical. I have two Matt Kent pieces, and then I just said he would be at Heroes, and his costs have gone up, and man, they just keep going up, and I just can't. I'd rather drop $300 on some Golden Age book than a piece of art. That's just me personally, because it. One thing that's cool about a commission is it's original. I mean, I admit it's original, and there's only one copy of that in existence, and that's kind of exciting. But if you ever want to get rid of it, you have to be hitting a very unique clientele for that comic. Little girl, and I took you on two walks. Two walks. I just don't get it. Why you're so hungry? You'll eat in an hour and a half. But anyway, that's what my focus is going to be. I used to love commissions when they were $160 and stuff like that. And yeah, I'll get a commission every now and then from somebody that has never done a comic and they just can draw good because they sell for cheap. But that's very rare. So I don't think I'm going to be doing any commissions. I can't believe I'm going to C2E2. Because when I think about it, it's going to be cool because of all the friends I'm going, but it's insane to go to Chicago in March when the weather is probably going to be really unstable. I like to go to cons where I'm in shorts and a t-shirt and walking miles to get some food. Because I love to walk. I mean, those of you who know, I love to walk. But so you got a lot of my thoughts, and they're controversial. I don't care if you agree with them or disagree, but I am very against petitions to block a comic or threatening creators because of their ideas about comics. And I don't like people to complain about a freaking solicit and say it's bad for the industry. I don't get it. Now, I could get a couple of responses saying from retailers saying, "Yeah, it's bad for the industry, and here's why." And I just never thought of it before. But as much as I've seen in the industry, I do not see how it hurts it as a whole. 'Cause every new title, I think, hurts it as a whole. Like, if you stop putting out new titles, now that would be freaking interesting. to see what people navigated to. Now that would be an interesting experiment, but nobody's got the cojones or balls to do it. 'Cause that would prove a lot of stuff. That would see like potential trends in upward sales of existing titles. Now that would be interesting to see. We'll never see it. Not now. But it's always been that way. Like you going back to the 90s. I mean, yes, in the 70s and Bronze Age, there was a fixed amount of titles, and in Silver Age, they had to get books published through DC and they could only do a handful, eight. I don't know what it was. So it was easier to get your hands on books then, but now it's like there's just so much. And I've seen some strange posts recently about like by Palmiotti about things are going to have to change, and I've seen TKO Comics coming about trying to change the industry. Are we ready for that? I don't know. I don't know if the Walmart books are a success, except for people that are already into comics. A matter of fact, the Walmart by our place is a pigsty, man. They have issues 3, 4, 6 of so many titles, but then they don't ever stock up the new ones. It's like, or they order less of the new ones and they sell out right away, or it's just really weird. If I was Walmart, I'd say, man, these books haven't sold. They have to have some agreement where they could ship it back off to somebody and replace it with new stuff, so there's always a flux of new stuff instead of the same box of comics that never moves. Now the one up north is nicer, but it's a lot farther and I don't ne go there as much. The Target that I've been to doesn't seem to be selling a lot of the Primal Age comics. They have a box full. It's still a lot. And I went to another Target to get it, and there was a box full of those, and I bought two of them. That's because I thought I was cool. So I don't know if that's tapping into any comic book market. I think if anything really is tapping in, it's the people that I know that are moving from paper to digital. There's more of those. So as much as I hate to see it, I think that's what's happening, at least for existing consumers, is that they're realizing, shit, I got a crap ton of books. I have my room full of the comics. My wife is pissed off at me because I'm now putting comics in the kitchen. Like you have to deal with that crap. So there's like fixed space. Do I get a storage unit? Do I not get a storage unit? But that's extra X amount. So a lot of people, hey, I either get rid of the stuff that's not important to me and go to Marvel Unlimited and DC, or a Comixology Unlimited and get a lot of comics that way. Or I go to Comixology and just buy collections on sales, and then you eventually have this huge library. I think that's what's really happening, is technology is starting to take the brunt of this. But that, well, God, I don't know if we'll ever know the how successful that is. But let's see if I can find it. I gotta stay away from Twitter. People are making me laugh. Go to Mike's questions. Let's see if I can knock out a couple. Ooh, this question is like poof. It's tough. Because I don't like two of the bands, but it's a Nick Wetmore question. Which superhero would have Radiohead stuck in their tape deck? I think there'd be a lot of Radiohead fans. God, I don't know them that much. Let me just see if I can. The only song that I really listen to a lot is "Creep," and that is a good song. Who would have that in their tape deck? I'm a creep. I'm a weirdo. What the hell am I doing here? I don't belong here. I would give that to the creeper. Matter of fact, that song could be in a creeper movie as like the main song for the creeper. That is who would have it. But you could. The creeper would not listen to music, I don't think. He'd just be fucking around. But Jack Ryder, who is the creeper, now he might have that in his tape deck. And he'd just pop in that cassette tape. So I'd go with the creeper from DC Comics. That wasn't too hard. The next one's tough. And I think Barb likes a song from these guys, but I'm not a big fan. What superhero would have Blind Melon stuck in their tape deck? So again, because I'm not very, I know one song from them, and I'm not a fan. Is it Change that I know? Blind Melon. I don't know. Let's go with Matt Murdock because he's blind. I don't know. That's a stupid answer, but I don't know them. So that's what I would go with. Which superhero would have Queen stuck in their tape deck? I'm gonna go with a team, Young Justice. I think if they were flying in that Forever People bike that they had in their usually Peter David series, that they would be popping in some of the more popular like Bohemian Rhapsody stuff and singing along together. What superhero would have Duke Ellington stuck in their tape deck? I could see Batman listening to Duke Ellington, Bruce Wayne. I think that the Shadow Man, he's very bluesy. I think he could have Duke Ellington. He would love that. Jack. So that was interesting. Who is your top five comic cover artists from both the Bronze Age and the Modern Age? I would say, since you're saying five from both ages, Jack Kirby. He'll be in every age. Todd McFarlane is another cover artist that I he doesn't do too many covers anymore, but man, when he was pumping out Spider-Man and Spawn, I was eating it up, eating it up. Who else? Eric Larson. I liked him on Spider-Man and also Savage Dragon, and I still do like him in Current Age. So a lot of image creators. I do like. Now I just can't think of the na his name, but I know who I have on my tip of my tongue. And he's in both ages too. Because it's modern age. I would go with Barry Windsor Smith. Very attracted to his Conans and his Archer and Armstrong in the modern age. Liked it a lot. Yeah, and it has a distinctive style, like rune and things that he has, like this way to draw faces that I don't really, his eyes look a certain way. I really like Barry Windsor Smith. So that's four. And man, it's five is tough. And it my list could change like all the time. I don't even think I think you said Bronze Age. You said Bronze Age and Modern Age. There are some Hulk covers that I actually love from the Bronze Age. I'm not as good with names. Like, I'll put up and you'll say, is that a Buscema? Is that a. I don't always know the names. Unless it's Jack Kirby, I always know it. Herb Trampy. He's really good. Yeah, I'd say I'm really attracted to his Hulk covers. There's something about him. He did a lot of them. Al Milgrom. You know what I'll go with? I'll go with John Byrne covers. I've always been attracted to John Byrne, whether it be in She-Hulk, Fantastic Four, Superman, whatever he was drawing, Next Men, X-Men. His covers are, I just love his covers. I love his artwork. So I'll go with John Byrne, Barry Windsor Smith. Todd McFarlane, Eric Larson, and Jack Kirby. Those are my five. Sorry I had to struggle with it, but what else do we got? Listening to the last Mike M's Weekly Reads, you read a few Age of Apocalypse issues. Could that be your next event? No, because I lost the mood and I wasn't reading them in order. What I did read was Blink, which led up to, I think, Age of Apocalypse. And then I read a few Age of Apocalypse, and I thought they were all right. And then for some reason, I started reading X-Man, which was in the midst of it. And I enjoyed what I read, but now I'm off into Neverland, and my mood changes a lot. The only consistency that I've had has been since Christmas. I've been wanting to read a lot of Venom, and I read a lot of Venom over the holidays. Brian Cullen Bunn and what was it? Mike Costa. And now I'm going back and I'm reading a lot of Venom that's old, some that I've read before, some that I haven't read. And what led me to this is very interesting. And it got me to buy the Venom Omnibus, which should be arriving here very soon. But I started listening a lot of my podcasts that I listen to regularly. I've dumped a couple podcasts. I don't know why. I just wasn't feeling them anymore. I've added a few, like around comics. I added 11 O'Clock Comics back in. I really ran out because there's some podcasts that I listen to that do interviews. I don't know what it's wrong with me, but I hate interviews. I don't know if I don't hate creators. I just don't want to listen to them talk. I don't know. Unless it's like a more personal, like I know them. Like the Monica episode that Martin did. Like I listened to the hell out of that. But I listened to a few of them and I just don't want to listen to interviews. I just don't. There's like this non I like natural banter between co-hosts that just know each other. And I don't like, I guess, the element of Q&A with somebody that's not intimately known. And I know some of the interviews are like that because they actually know these people, but it just doesn't attract me to that. So, what else? I should I have never read Age of Apocalypse, and I've sampled some books. Like I said, I read Blink and I X-Men I liked a lot towards the tail end when I started buying it monthly. But I didn't read the proper event. A matter of fact, that event made me stop buying X-Men because it was an easy jumping off point. And I didn't jump off of DC a lot, but I jumped off a lot of Marvel. I really did. Times have changed. Times have changed. A lot of things that I'm procuring right now are Marvel, getting full runs of Marvel. I'm starting a Vector. So things are changing. And he said that he just wrapped it up and for his first time and he thought it was fantastic. Well, what I'm into right now is Venom and the Epic Marvel podcast had some Venom issues, even though there are no Epic collections. He started with the first three minis. And I just started listening to him like nonchalant on walks, and it made me very interested. And now I'm in a Venom kick. A matter of fact, if I ha how many I've read so much Venom this year, if you consider from December to now, that it's almost like my adopt a character for the year. Like I am just finding, and I think the movie helped a lot. A matter of fact, I just read a mini series, the very first Venom mini series, Lethal Protector, I think it's what it's called. And it had so many similarities to the movie. I was blown away. The two main villains in that thing, the corporation was in that. The two main the one guy that owned the corporation and his bodyguard were in it. The homeless situation was in it. They had taken a lot of the plot points of that and turned it into the movie, and it was really fascinating because I really enjoyed the movie. I already seen it twice. And the second time, I liked it even more. So I'm in the Venom kick, I could say. And as far as like things changing, they change every week. I'm a mood reader, and I cannot stay focused. I can't, and that's a flaw, but it's a pro at the same time. Because it makes me enjoy the comic books much, much more. What superhero would Arby's be their favorite restaurant? Well, Arby's is where's the beef? So I'd give it to Images the Beef because that guy loved beef. That was an Image comic called The Beef. That would be the one I'd select for Arby's. What superhero would Jack in the Box be their favorite restaurant? Jack in the Box is kind of unique. I think their burgers suck. But they have like taquitos and the chicken and rice bowl, teriyaki bowl. They have like a lot of different things. So, who would eat Jack in the Box? Man, these are tough questions because you never really catch a lot of superheroes drinking or eating anything but big belly burgers in DC Universe. So I think one of your questions is, as our big boy, their favorite restaurant. I think Blue Devil would like that big boy. I really do. I could see him macking down there with his trident, eating a big boy. Taco Bell could be anybody. Everybody likes Taco Bell. It's the best fast food restaurant with the same ingredients. Yeah, this is a tough question. Jack in the Box. I'd say Booster Gold and Blue Beetle. They might stop off at Jack in the Box. They seem like the kind of people that would stop off in Jack in the Box. Big Boy is a sit-down restaurant, at least it used to be. And Matt, I used to like that restaurant as a kid because you could get Big Boy comics and all kinds of stuff. It was just a fun restaurant as a kid. Taco Bell. Everybody loves a taco. I don't know. I never think of food and superheroes, so it's hard. Just like music. Like, if you were to give me, like, more of a new wave type or a standard rock and roll, I could think of superheroes listening to it. Even though, like, Queen was not a problem and jazz is not a problem, but you throw in Radiohead and Blind Melon, which is kind of like 90s alternative, sort of grungy in my opinion, and I've never been into that scene. I just never have. But I do love Creep. I do love that song. And I know a lot of friends that swear by Radiohead. It's just not been one of my things. So this is an interesting question from Paul Tessenier, and I know he won't ever hear the answer, so I don't know why he asks the question, but it's a very good question, and nobody's asked this question before or come close to it, and I think it's a very good question. When placing a My Comic Book Shop order, what is your minimum grade? So that's my a personal grade. My minimum grade that I would go for is a VG, and because a lot of their VGs look like fine, but I like to target, like, if it's in the 80s or no, let's go, if it's in the 70s or below, I will either go VG or fine just to drop the price down. As the decades grow older and older, I will move more towards very fine, or yeah, very fine and mint. But that's how things go. Once I get in the 80s, I'm either fine or very fine. And you get in the 90s, I like to get very fine, and then very fine after that. I very seldom try to get a mint because by the time it's shipped and stuff, it's not mint. I don't care what you say. Mint to me, near mint is like perfect. And I'll always see flaws in every near mint book that they ever have I've ever seen. Kirk says, did you prefer new tales of classic characters such as Shadow and Airboy set in modern times or their original settings? I approve. What the fuck am I talking about? I like original settings better. So if a character was in the 40s or the 20s, or I prefer them to be in that. But there have been some really good takes of moving a character into the future. A Spider, Dynamite's done a couple of these. Green Hornet, they've done some good stuff. The Shadow. But when you put them in their original time period, that's like when the magic works, because that's when they were pulpy and right, and they fit right in. So I would say I prefer the original settings. I wonder what you think. I think you would say original settings. This is a crazy question. When you die, do you think DCBS service will buy a memorial ad in this month, in that month's comics? No. I'm sure there are people that buy a lot more than me. I just don't know anybody yet. I think that they'll be disappointed because I've been loyal since like 2006. And I think once I hit 2010, I've moved over the majority of my collection over to them. Except DC, I've kept consistent at my DC proper, like just the standard DC that doesn't go into the Wildstorm or the Vertigos or the kids' books or whatever. Those I'll get at DCBS. But if it's Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, and a non-mini, I'll get that at the LCS. Why do so many people claim to love Jose Luis Garcia Lopez but refuse to read the classic Atari Force? I think you're poking at your most of your friends that are stubborn and don't want to read Atari Force, but I know on my side of the world that Garcia Lopez fans love Garcia Lopez and love Atari Force. Matter of fact, one thing I like about getting commissions from Shannon Gallant is he knows how many he can take a day. He is somebody I'll still buy commissions from. And he's got like the same pop culture fandom that I love, like from the 70s and 80s. He's very into that stuff. And one thing I like about Shannon too is if you don't have time for a commission, he sketches all the time. So he's got like this binder of sketches that he does. And I picked up some Atari Force from him one year, and he's like, he loves Garcia Lopez. A matter of fact, he's got several pictures, Shannon Gallant, of him hugging Garcia Lopez because he just loves him. And if he's at a con, he'll always go give him a big hug. So, and Keith, my friend Keith Knutson, is also a big Garcia Lopez fan, and he loved Atari Force. So, I the people that I know that are big Garcia Lopez fans, and he did a lot of advertising too. He drew all like the images for T-shirts and stuff back in the day, and stuff that you'd see on lunchboxes and stuff. It's like Garcia Lopez. So he did a lot of their advertising and style guides and stuff like that because he was so damn good at it. So I think that's more on your world, and I just don't know why anybody would refuse to read Atari Force other than they think, oh, it's a video game thing, and it has nothing to do with the video game. The original Atari Force was closer, the ones that were small mini comics inside the cartridges. But once it became Atari Force, it was its own entity, and it's pretty awesome. And then the last question is, he says, what is the status of hunting scalps? He thinks I'm going to do a scalp hunter podcast. I'm not planning on doing this scalp hunter podcast. If I ever do talk to Joe on Mike Gems Collector's Corner, I'm sure I'll ask him about Scalp Hunter. But I have had a hard time like coming up with a plan on when I can do these things for Mike Gems Collector's Corner. Just because work is so busy, I can't do in a work night. I'm too exhausted. And the weekends, my Sunday is my day where I podcast, and usually I'm booked. And then I have the one yoga night that I can do this podcast. So I guess if I did it, I'd have to do it on a night where I can arrange that. But Thanks for the questions. One more from Fred Reads Comics. What's your favorite genre of comics to read? That is pretty easy. It's superheroes, and it's because there's so many of them. But I do like a lot of other genres, but my favorite is superheroes. It's such a soap opera. So that wraps up those questions. I still have a bunch of rank-ems to go over from Nick, and they'll be coming up in another episode. So stay tuned for the weekly reads. So bear with me for a moment. I decided that I'm going to record that next bit on Sunday morning because there's not going to be any Geek Brunch or Geek Brunch Retro, which is usually my Sunday morning. So I'm going to go ahead and finish this up on Sunday morning and go to read some comics. I'm probably going to go start some JLA, finish up Joe Kelly's run. So I'll be right back. Actually, in a day with Mike M's Weekly Reads. You know what? I decided to go ahead and do this because Barb hasn't texted me yet. So I want to cover. This has been a weird episode with the Harley thing and then me griping about some people complaining about stuff. So it's me complaining against complainers. Which is weird. And then the questions that I had were really bizarre, especially when you're matching a song to a person, a comical character, or the food one I had a really hard time with. I don't know how to do that. But if you got ideas on that food thing, let me know. But I'm going to be talking about comic books that I read 2 weeks ago. And I want to give you my I refresh you my ratings because I love the granularity of the ratings. There's no mistaking how I feel. So if I give a number one to a book, that means I hated it. If I give a number two to a book, that means I didn't like it. If I give a number three to a book, that means I liked it. If I give a four to a book, that means I really liked it. And if I give a five to a book, that means I loved it. So like that just kind of describes the emotions. So this week we'll start with the 3 out of 5s. So at the very bottom, it was Marvel Super Special Star-Lord number 10. This is a magazine format, a really cool looking book. As far it's in color for a magazine. The first story is about Star-Lord and his ship. They come across a black hole, type area where they're gonna get sucked in, and he gets separated from his ship, and a race of people claiming that they are from Earth save him. And are out to recruit him. He finds out from a female security officer that they are not human, and they are trying to trick him and lead him down a path with the big bads to consume worlds. Actually, lead them to Earth so they can strip mine the resources and destroy it. So they know he's from Earth. They know that they can use him, and they're trying to flesh that out. He has sex with an alien creature, and they form a rebel alliance to take down the big bads that are consuming these worlds. And it seems like when they consume a world, the ship gets bigger. It reminded me of Mortal Engines because when they had that moving steampunk London, it would consume little moving cities or towns, and the people would be consumed and told to work there, so it like consume them, and that's kind of like what this big spaceship was about. But they work together to overthrow the big bads. The second story was about an astronaut that ends up siding with a race that is trying to kill him. He then wakes up from the dream, and he don't know if it's real, But there is a lot of blood on his head indicating that it might be, so you don't know. It's kind of like a Planet of the Apes type thing, you know. I felt pretty neutral about it. Like, the art was really great. The story was kind of average for me. If you're a big art fan, you might like it a little more, but I always grade story a little harder than I do art. And I've told people this. The story is, it's like 70-30. It's a weird thing to do with comics. You'd think it'd be a 50-50 medium. But for me personally, that's how it breaks down. That was a magazine I just purchased recently. I then get into the 4 out of 5s, which means I really liked it. At the bottom was Naomi. This really had some spectacular artwork. I just didn't think it got into depth about like the characterization. It was more about the situation, which was really different. Superman fights Mongol in a small town. Naomi is fascinated with Superman because he is an orphan, much like she's an orphan, and she's investigating the supers in her town, and she finds out the day she was adopted is the same day a hero was in that town. And she actually goes to question a particular individual, and he starts giving her some information. It focuses on the town and the personality than the actual characters. I'm sure that's coming down the road. And it looks like to be an interesting ride and a very new character to the world. I think she's going to have some links to Krypton, but that's just me guessing. We got the Unexpected number 1 and 2. This is the new Firebrand was a paramedic until her body was donated to an evil corporation when she died, and they gave her a conflict engine. It's kind of like the heart, her heart now, which gave her Firebrand powers. Later, the Bad Samaritan needs the conflict engine, so attacks her VA hospital where she's working as her alias. The Defenders come to the rescue, and I said the Defenders because this is like a Defenders book, which is Neon, Viking Judge, and Ascendant. It's kind of mimicking the Hulk, Doctor Strange, and Valkyrie. They try to protect her, but a huge explosion happens, and it only appears that Firebrand and Neon made actually survived the explosion. Omar Sin on Thanagar hired the Bad Samaritan. That was weird. Hired the Bad Samaritan, but he's working for somebody else. So Omar Sin is a Hawkman villain, so it's important. The origin of Neon and Omar Sin sends Manhawks, which are also Hawkman villains, and General Fade after Firebrand. Neon and Firebrand meet up with June Robbins of the Challengers of the Unknown. So there's a lot going on in this book. It's got a Defenders type feel. The new Firebrand's pretty cool. I really sort of like this. This was really exciting. I read 2 issues of that. We then get into Superman 3 through 7. Earth is sucked into the Phantom Zone accidentally by Star Labs. It's kind of hard to read Action and Superman because they're very distinctively different books by the same writer, and it's hard to place which one's like happening first. They don't alternate like Superman, Action Superman, you know, like they did back in the day when you'd have those little Superman shields and you'd know which one to read next. I tended to just read them by title, and that was probably a good way to read it because they really have loose connections to each other on how to tie things together. Superman 3 through 7, so it's sucked into the Phantom Zone by Star Labs. This is affecting breathing conditions of most of the humans on Earth, including the Justice League members. Superman is fighting Rogozar in the Phantom Zone. The Atom manages to get Earth out of the Phantom Zone and unshrinks it. They managed to get Superman out as he and Zod were fighting Rogozar. I don't quite understand how Zod ended up arriving in the zone. That was the confusing part for me, but Rogozar defeats Zod as Superman got ported out while during the fight when him and Zod were both fighting Ruggle Zod. John comes back to Earth as a teenager, so he's aged. I don't know how I feel about that yet. And he says his grandfather is nuts and he needs help to stop him. A matter of fact, there's this weird scene I remember distinctively when Superman's found his son and he's aged and he's bringing her home, and Lois doesn't know. I found it odd too that Lois left, thinking she couldn't like help the situation. She left her son with this creepy ass dude Jor-El, which doesn't seem right in his mind. But anyway, she was there thinking that Clark was coming home and they were going to get some nasty going on, get some sex. And she's talking nasty and he brings in their son. It's kind of like an awkward moment. We then get into War as Hell. There are two really good stories. The first one is about a Nazi fighter pilot that loves jazz music. The irony of the story is he kills jazz musicians towards the end of the war as Nazis losing. He's a really good fighter pilot, and he doesn't know that these jazz musicians are on the plane. He thinks they're just more troops. Ends up shooting down these musicians that, he loves listening to, which is the irony of the situation. The second story is about a female child soldier possessed by a demon, and when she dies, she transfers the deity to an American soldier. This is more like an Afghanistan type time frame. The first one was drawn and written by Howard Chaykin. I can't remember who did the second one. We got Lodger number one. This is a Black Crown IDW book. It was hard, a little confusing. I had to do a little research to read it. But a young girl is chasing a killer across various states. The way it is written, you begin to wonder if she's the killer. But it's the captions belong to the actual serial killer that she's chasing. It's just a very strange way of telling the story. But once you realize what's going on, it's a pretty damn good story, and you know that David Laffam is gonna nail this thing. So that was Lodger number one. The next one up is Heroes in Crisis number five. Yes, I really liked it. Booster and Beetle go after the Flash to find out what's going on, to see if Booster's innocent or not. And meanwhile, Batgirl and Harley question Skeets. They finally confront Booster. At this point, the crime looks time-related, so it's pointing to him. Superman addresses the world about Sanctuary and Heroes, and that is what made this issue special for me personally. Plus, the Joker's joke to Harley was pretty funny. I enjoyed this book. It played upon a lot of history, like of Steel and other characters, to like Justice League Detroit era type thing. So that was kind of cool. I think this book is starting to sit well with me. But we'll see. We'll see if it sticks the landing for me. I know a lot of people love it, and I know a lot of people on the other side that don't like it. So I'm kind of in the middle, but more on the side of really enjoying it. Next one, Marvel Graphic Novel number four. These are the ones that I'm trying to complete a full set. This was the first appearance of the New Mutants. The origin of Rain, Karma, Sunspot, Mirage, and Cannonball, as they're brought together to fight Donald Pierce, who had infiltrated the Hellfire Club and captured Sage. She's not listed as Sage here, but I later found out from my friends that that is Sage, who was in the Hellfire Club. He is looking to go after all the New Mutants. A matter of fact, he recruits Cannonball to go fight the rest of the mutants. Moira MacTaggert and Charles X protect the kids as they seek revenge and defeat Pierce and his bionic drones. So, Moira MacTaggert was on the island with Rain, and she's being hunted by the priests, and she frees her and takes her to Charles Xavier. Karma gives her backstory about being Vietnamese with her brothers and sisters and trying to raise them and going to Professor X. Sunspot was a soccer player and had a an inter-race relationship with another girl, and it was causing racial tensions, and his powers manifested itself during the soccer match, and he became a new mutant. Cannonball basically was a coal miner at the age of like 16, like right when he was supposed to get ready for college at 17, and his father died of the black lung, and he had to go to work instead of go to college to keep his family afloat. And that's when his powers manifested, and he actually saved his boss in the mine. And that's when Pierce recruited him. And then they end up in a big fight with Pierce. It was really interesting. I'd never read it before. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Almost gave it a 5 out of 5, but that was a 4 out of 5, the last 4 out of 5. We then get into the 5 out of 5s. You're gonna laugh at a couple of them. Mr. T and the T Force. I really enjoyed the hell out of this. It just hit the spot with me. I read it out loud in a Mr. T voice, and I had so much fun with it. I was even reading it to Barb. Just good way. I even discussed it with my wife, some of the scenes, because it was just crazy. Mr. T is taking out drug dealers. He captures a group of them by filming them and lets go of one young kid, and then takes him to a dumpster and finds a crack baby in there and says, "Hey, fool, you're gonna raise this crack baby." And that guy takes the child to a clinic to try to help the child, and it turns out the nurses say that the child's not going to be affected by the drugs, at least from what they can tell. And it has this guy, he's actually like recruiting criminals as he goes along, kind of like the Shadow and Doc Savage, how they have these characters that support their missions and stuff. But he recruits criminals to do it, and then now they become part of his posse, which is really interesting. He owns a building and takes care of tenants. One woman is always saying, "My sink don't work, my fridge don't work," and she can't even pay him. She's always complaining, and he's fixing her sink and toilet. He finds out her nephew is selling drugs, so he can take that money for his rent. He finds the money in the fridge. Another comic where he busts up a chop shop that is stealing a lot of cars. He fights a guy called Inca. Inca is an interesting villain because he's fighting for families that work in the cocoa fields and is pretty pissed off at Mr. T for taking the work away from families that are producing drugs on these fields. It's a really weird take. He then protects women and kids who lost her husband from a gang, and they keep taking the pension checks from her dead husband's checks. As she goes to cash them, they take all her money. So that's kind of where I ended up with Mr. T and the T Force. Really good art by Norm Breyfogle and Neil Adams. It just hit the spot, so I gave it a 5 out of 5. Action Comics 102 through 107. I enjoy Action Comics a hell of a lot more than Superman. It's just more to my level of liking, and just plotting is just really good. Miss Good is writing articles to slam Superman. She's getting into the secret organization of Leviathan and learning what keywords not to say because Superman could always be listening. She turns out to be Red Cloud and fights with Superman twice. Miss Good manages to get some kryptonite, and Clark gets very sick in the Daily Planet, and he doesn't know why he's sick, but he does use his X-ray vision to see in her purse and know that there's kryptonite there, so he gives Batman a phone call, and Batman goes and steals the kryptonite. There are also mysterious deaths happening in Gotham, and it is being attributed to the kind being attributed to Red Cloud and Superman. Perry knows Superman is innocent. Clark finds that Lois is not in space. That was what the weird part was. It was in this story, not Superman. But is working on a story, and John is with Jor-El himself, which is really strange to me because she left her son with a crazy man. Jimmy is dating a girl who is part of Cobra. He tries to escape from one of their rallies. Lois reveals to her father that Clark is Superman, which could be really bad because he hates Superman. He simply gets the news and walks away, kind of like he's shocked that she told him this. And the gossip columnist has photos of Lex Luthor with Lois, so she thinks she's having an affair and giving these things to Perry to produce, and they're saying, "No, this is ridiculous." But she did answer the door, and they has a picture of her in her nightgown, her what do they call those things? Her robe, her like shower robe, talking to Luthor, so it looks very suspicious. And Leviathan is a group that seems very interesting. A matter of fact, it ended on one cliffhanger that showed the car that's in Action Comics number one. So this Leviathan group could go back all the way to Action Comics number one. It's really crazy. We got GLA 81 through 83. I'm really loving this. Bruce and Diana try to attempt a date. The new roster introduced to the UN, and President Luthor questions the diversity of the lineup, basically saying, making fun of their lineup, like you're forcing this because you want this more diverse line, but they really are not in the league of the other heroes. The JLA tries to stop a Waco event from happening in Heartland. Everyone is dead from the explosion, and Superman is blamed for the Waco incident and arrested. Diana tries to talk to him in prison. Flash and GL are missing, Green Lantern. Faith and Major Disaster are hiding out in a trailer, and Faith blames herself for all that has happened and all the deaths that have happened. Axis America appears behind the carnage and framing the Justice League. Manitou Raven senses that there are no spirits and no one is really dead. Apparently, they used Green Lantern used his energy to protect them from the blast. Batman, Firestorm, and Atom are investigating the site. Martian Manhunter is being treated for his fear of fire by a character called Scorch. Martian Manhunter and Scorch end up making out. What the hell? Does that mean they're cured from his fear of fire? The whole event was staged by this group called the Clock Watchers to get Faith back. It had a weird character, the Mouth, and it related to those two Donna Matrix characters that we saw in the previous arc that I talked about a week ago. The Mouth is this like cube with this huge lips that can influence the way people think. In other words, he could say, "Superman, you killed all these people. The explosion happened because of you," and he starts to believe it. He could tell Faith, "You're the reason they died," and Faith starts blaming herself so she could join back up with the Clock Watchers. The Mouth was able to make the leaguers think they were all guilty. Axis America got away, but John Stewart managed to save all of the kids and families from the explosion. Really cool story. Really loved it. The next week, actually tomorrow, I'll be reading the remainder Joe Kelly JLA. Got Crowded number one. A very active online job woman. She has like a lot of online jobs. Her whole life is getting jobs online. Gets a crowd fund from somebody unknown to kill her, so she has to hire a low-end bodyguard to protect her. They're both trying to figure out who would actually hire the hit on her. It's very interesting. I really enjoyed it. And I'm not into interviews, and I didn't listen to the interview, but Martin interviewed some of the creators on Crowded, so I will promote a show. If you're into the interviews, you should go listen to Comic Talk Today, I think from last week, where he interviewed the two creators. So just a summary, that was 28 books, 5 now, 3 Marvel, 1 Image, 1 IDW, and 18 DC Comics. The 5 out of 5s that I love were Mr. T and the T-Force, Action Comics, JLA, and Crowded. I want to thank you all for listening and being patient with me from this episode, because I was a little off my game because some weird shit happened. Harley was eating dirt And Harley then decided to choose some Tupperware. So this episode could be called Harley Destroys the Tupperware. But I'll talk to you again all soon, and you can reach me at mike@comicbooknoise.com. That's my email. I put the shows out at geekbrunchpodcast.com. Go check the website. And that's where I host Geek Brunch, Geek Brunch Retro, Mike M's Weekly Reads, and when I get a chance, Mike M's Collector's Corner. So also check out DCNoisePodcast.com, where you will see me and Kyle talk about DC. So that's called DC Spotlight. And get that podcast. And that concludes all the podcasts I do. On Twitter, you can reach me at Mike Myers Brunch. And I think that's about wraps it. Leave an iTunes review. I'd be stoked to get one either on DC Noise or Mike Elzinger Reads. Haven't had one in a year, so it would be interesting. So I'll talk to you again soon. I want to thank those that retweet the show. It really helps the show. So when I tweet it out and you retweet it or like it, it's a big deal to me because it gets more visibility on the Twitters. So that's one way to pay the podcast. And if you want to make a donation, make it to Derek Coward. He's got a pay button on and a Patreon that's located at comicbooknoise.com website, and that he pretty much pays for all these podcasts that I do, and he's been doing it for years. So if you want to throw a couple bucks his way, we'd all appreciate it. Just tell him it's from Geek Brunch or DC Spotlight, whatever you choose to like. And I will talk to you again soon. Thanks for listening, and thanks for putting up with this chaotic show. So I'll talk to you later. Bye.